Good day. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Oh, good. Well, good to see so many of you here. It is every time I'm here, there's so many of you here. But I just want to kind of share my story, if you will. And all stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, I don't know when this story is going to end, but we will try to stop around when it is. So first of all, I want to give you some historical background about Depressed Anonymous. I believe that Depressed Anonymous International has done more for me in my struggle with depression than any other group that I've been in. So this has been a new creation, I guess, 4 years ago. This international group, at first it was on Skype and now it's on Zoom. But it's continued to give hope to those who have lost hope. And we are talking about an addiction here, a process addiction, not a substance addiction. A process addiction is a behavioral addiction, like going to the computer. And you can't feel that you have any control over getting off the computer. Or it could be somebody who's addicted to pornography, or somebody who is addicted to gambling. These are process addictions. I have been able to be addicted to substance as well as depression. So in 1985, before probably a lot of you were born, I was getting my master's degree in counseling psychology at the University of Evansville in 1983 to 85. And at that time, I also had been with another fellowship. And so I found the 12 steps to be quite a potent vehicle. Presented a great presence of hope for people in that group and fellowship. So anyway, I went to the professor, he was training us, and asked if I might get some people together who were depressed, because I had just come from 10 weeks of sessions with a person named Jane. This is all in the foreword of our DA book. So if you have read it, just stick with me. So Jane, we had hourly sessions for 10 weeks. And about the middle of those sessions, she started coming alive, so to speak, and starting talking more and started to do things that gave her pleasure before she was depressed. So she was going back to some of those old hobbies and things that brought her life and hope. So I told the dean of psychology at the university, why don't we get these people who are depressed together, you know, and see how that works. Oh, he said, no, Hugh, that's not going to work. Not going to work. I said, well, why? The 12 steps work. Well, you know what? It won't work because they can't even get out of bed. so that was his response. So I said, Dean, I'm going to show you're wrong. So he said, well, go ahead then and see what happens. I'll tell you, I told you so. Well, you know, he told me, but it wasn't so. After about 12 weeks of going through a program for depression, people got better, lots got better, some got better, but most of them had more hope than when they started this this program. It wasn't Depressed Anonymous, so it was just a program to see how the 12 steps would work. Well, eventually, what happened, some of the group members from that program came into a program specifically for them, for depression support. And somebody said, well, what are we going to call it? I said, well, you know, I don't know. What do you recommend? And some woman said, well, we call it Uppers for Downers. I said, well, you know, well, that's clever. But I said, why don't we call it Anonymous, Depressed Anonymous? That's who we are. Oh. Well, group agreed. That's a good title because that's what we are. We are depressed and we are in a 12-step program of recovery. So that's what we did. And people started getting better. And so we started two groups in Evansville, Indiana, 1985, May the 30th, 1985. So we started that group that year. And while I was in that group, somebody gave me a book. It's a very, very, it changed my life. Besides the AA book, this book changed my life by Dorothy Rowe, Depression, The Way Out of Your Prison. I read that book and I said, my gosh, this makes so much sense, you know, about depression. So she was a psychologist, PhD from England. And so I incorporated that with the group. We talked about that and we made it part of our group, our manual. So you can see that a lot about Dorothy Rowe there. So in 1985, we got started. Then I got a job. I was in private practice for a while in Evansville. And then I got a notice about a new position in Louisville. Oh, I said, well, that really sounds great, you know? So I said, I think I'll apply for that because the two groups were doing fine in Evansville. Well, you know, when I moved to Evansville in 1986 or seven, and as soon as I set up my office in this agency, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to have people who are depressed come here and use our program, Depressed Anonymous. And well, that's all right with us, you know, do whatever you want to do and see what happens. So what happened was a lot of good things happened. At that time, we did not have a book. We had no literature, just us. And so we decided let's write a book. Let's write our book. So I wrote out a manuscript. Every week I wrote out a manuscript and then we came together and we talked about what was written. Sometime we had some very different ideas about what we should put in this book. But we finally got consensus and we went through all 12 chapters, all 12 steps, and we had this book. So that made people aware that there is literature and that is the DA manual. So that was published in 1990. Also at the same time, a book was published in England, at HarperCollins, with the first book that we had finished. It was just a basic book on depression and the 12 steps. And so HarperCollins published that book. But anyway, we had the book and then we had the manual and then we started using the manual. And it started to build, the group started to grow in Evansville, Louisville. And so with that in mind, we added members of the Evansville group with members of the Louisville group, their special stories. And you'll find those in the back of our DA manual, the third edition. And with that, you can see what people thought and how they got helped. So from there, we published a workbook in 2002. And I decided with the group that, you know, should we talk about people who are angry with God? Should we do that? Or should we write a workbook? So we were going back and forth. And I knew that people who are depressed many times were angry with God and how their life has turned out. So we published the workbook because I prayed about that. We prayed about it and we came up with the idea. It's like I heard a voice says, no, do it. Print the workbook. And so we printed the workbook. And I thought the higher power was with us that time to print that workbook. Because if you go through the workbook, I use it when I sponsor people. That it's a very effective way to learn about yourself. The questions asked are questions we all ask. And by having that workbook, you can come to some really close encounter with yourself. You can talk to your sponsor about it or talk with a fellow member of the group. So I know you use that here. So a lot of things come up in this book that you probably wouldn't have thought of, things that I would never have thought of. So that happened in 2002. I'm going back now to a very important part of the story in the beginning. I had never been depressed before this group started. Why did I start a group? I wasn't depressed. Well, I started the group because I became depressed. Shortly after the group had been started, the project of the university, my life fell apart. My dad was dying. I had to come home from a career that I had for many, many years. I had to give up friends that I'd known for 20 years or more. And because of my addiction, it's like I was an empty bottle. And so that's very painful. I had to live with my parents. Can you believe that? Oh my gosh, I was, I think, 44, 45 years old. I was filled with shame and guilt. So I thought I better get in the university. And I was with AA at that time. And so I found some hope. But at the same time, a woman friend of mine, we broke up. And that ended a relationship. So that was very painful for me as well, a relationship breaking up. And so after that, I had to get a job. I had to support myself. So I got a job with a minority group. I'd worked with Native Americans all my adult life, setting up cooperatives and collaborative programs on reservations. So I fit right in there. But the point I'm making is my life really fell apart, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I also gave up smoking. That was worse than giving up other things, let me tell you. So if you've ever smoked and tried to give it up, it's the worst addiction. I mean, so I think my life suffered health-wise from that. So anyway, I was really depressed. I really knew what people were feeling. I was depressed for over a year, and I couldn't get out of bed. We've heard that story. I just couldn't get out of bed. I just couldn't do anything. I was unmotivated. So what did I do? I started walking. I felt like Forrest Gump. You ever see that movie, Forrest Gump? That's one of my favorites. And at the very end of his walk, after 3 years of walking, he says, why am I doing this? But I did it because I had to get rid of the jitteriness, the emptiness, the hollow feeling, deadening, scary. And that helped me get rid of it by walking. And 5 miles every day for over a year in this mall. I probably missed a day or two here and there or more. And I always had a cup of coffee afterwards. That was my reward. My hand was shaking. You get the shakes with depression sometimes, you know. You get shaky and you're irritable. And nothing seems to work. Hopeless, helpless. It was about a couple months after that year, I was walking, and all of a sudden, I felt a lightness in my head, a lightness like I used to feel before I got depressed. Because when I got depressed, I could tell you the time of day, where I was at, and how it felt. It was that powerful. It's a light feeling. And I felt, wow, I could be almost cheerful. And then I heard this voice in my head said, yeah, but it ain't going to last. You know, that voice is sitting on our shoulder with the horns. It's not, and it didn't. It didn't last. But a couple of weeks later, I kept on walking. I wasn't going to give up. You have to be persistent in this program. Persistent. Resilient. And that's what I was. I was trying to go on. So I finally walked out of this fog. You know, it's a mental fog. You can't think. You can't remember anything. You can't read anything. You can't retain anything. So it was really a monster. So anyway, that was over. And then I felt, you know, I'm going to join this group. Depressed Anonymous. Sounds good to me. And so it was good for me. And I found that it was good for other people. Other people wanted some hope. They felt helpless. But when they came to this group, where we're at today, you know what they felt? Hey, I know people just like me. I am not alone. I have hope. I have somebody else. I can even have a sponsor. I can have somebody to talk to. And I can read the literature. And so that's where we started to grow. The book helped. But you know what helped the most was this Zoom and Skype. So now, I was working with people internationally before we became an international group, from Iran, Poland, Russia. And so then when this Zoom Skype meeting started, my gosh, here we are, huh? Here we are, how God uses us to go around the world and give people hope. And so we have people that speak different languages, different cultures that show up here. And you're here, and I'm here, and I'm still alert to those red flags. And you use the tools when that happens. You use the tools and you find out, hey, I know how to work myself out of this with the help of the group or a sponsor. So that's the beauty, that you're not alone anymore. There is help and there's hope. All you got to do is call on your phone or email them, and you can find so much support in this group. I'm going to tell you this. I've been with other fellowships. And this is one fellowship I feel that they know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. And I know what you're talking about. I don't know the extent or the intensity of your depression, but I know it's life-threatening. I know you don't fool around with this. I know you better get help if you feel so bad you want to kill yourself. You must get help. So with the program, with the people, I noticed this after this program has been going, I think, 3 years here on the internet. This program started with Skype. Now it's on Zoom. And that's powerful. You know why? Because one person and a few others, they said, let's get this thing going. And they did. Very professionally run to this day. It's magnificent. It's a wonder. It's amazing that we can come together and talk and share confidentially about our deepest, deepest feelings of being alone. So with that, I'd like to just say that there is so much involved in being depressed. It's a closed system. Depression is a closed system. Let's look at that. First of all, it's your thinking, your feelings, your moods, your behavior, your motivation, your social context wither away. You gradually move back further and further in isolation. That's the worst thing you can do. I found out myself. So it's thinking, feeling, the moods, behavior, social contact, and then spirituality, the spirit, the higher power. So it's a closed system. And the way to get out of this is to start thinking about which one do I find keep me in prison. I'm going to tell you what imprisoned me. It was my thinking. The thinking that I did is the beginning of this closed system that locks you in, because your thinking has an effect on your feelings. Feelings affect your moods. Moods affect your motivation. When I was a kid, we had a kid in the block. I said, hey, Bob, want to go? Let's go fishing today. Well, I'm not in the mood for it. Have you ever said that? I've said it. Well, I'm just not in the mood for it. And it affects your relationships. So anyway, it's a closed system. So what you do is to start thinking about your thinking. And we do that in this program. We talk about feelings. We talk about moods. We talk about our behavior. And by doing that, we get an understanding for ourselves and others to motivate, to re-motivate ourselves, to say, I can do this. Motivation follows action. In the big book of AA, the chapter is getting into action. And that's what we're all about. We're getting into action. And, you know, the Nike thing, just do it. I think that's just do it. So when you see a Nike thing, I say, hey, they're telling me to just do it. So we're not alone. We have the support. We have everybody that we need, really. You can be on medication. You can see a therapist. And then you got this support group. That's what I felt when I was doing the counseling services. I felt if somebody was above and didn't really need a depression group, I would refer them to some specialist or some psychologist, psychiatrist. So that worked. But really, the room was filled and for people looking for help. And so the stigma, I hope, is going away just as it is for alcoholism and drug use. So those are important to remember. Motivation follows action. Everybody here today, I bet there's one or two that didn't want to come today. Is that might be true. Huh? Well, you just ask us, did I want to come today? There's days I didn't want to come, you know. But you know, there's two times you should go to a meeting. One, when you want to come, and then two, when you don't want to come. So there you go. You got it. So with that in mind, the program has progressed. We have a couple books out there, The Higher Thoughts for Down Days. I'll Do It When I Feel Better. That talks about the compulsiveness of our depression. That's the process. That's the process of addiction. Addicted to how we think. My gosh, you know, it's not a drug or anything, but we carry it around every day in our mind. And so you need to really start looking at the things that cause you sadness. And you can find that out, really. You can write them down. You can make a list of the thoughts that keep coming back, the repetitive thinking about how awful you are, how bad you are. So we developed a little thing called the sunspot. Every time you have a negative thought, put a sunspot in it. Think of something from your past that you found especially beautiful. And that works for me. But what doesn't work for me is this addiction to negativity. And we're living in a world pretty negative, right? And so what I do is trying to find time for prayer and meditation. Prayer and meditation. Now, we're not getting fancy here. We're just talking about simple talking to God, the God of your understanding. I felt that was a key to Bill W. and Dr. Bob's success with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? Because they believed that there is a power greater than ourselves. And you know, that works. It works for me. We're not a religious group, but we are a powerful group because we believe that something big out there is with me. Remember Kitty Hawk, how people made fun of him, those bicycle tires trying to fly this thing? And guess what? It flew because he believed. In his mind, he had a map what this thing was going to look like and do. And it did it because he believed in that. Also, Stanley Steemer, remember that thing on the river as a steamer and smoke and all that came out? And people said, that thing's going to blow itself up, you know? But guess what? It became the forerunner of the steamship because in his mind, he believed that this thing is going to work. And that takes it back to Bill W. and Dr. Bob. Everybody had tried to heal the drunks, you know, the alcoholics on the Bowery in New York. Maybe if we feed them a meal, they'll have to come because they're hungry. They'll want to, and then they hear a message from us, you know, a message of God and spirituality and so on and so forth. Well, that didn't seem to do it. That doesn't cure people. That doesn't help people. It did at the time, but what really helped is to, first of all, admit that you have a problem needs to be dealt with. Just do it. we admitted that we were powerless over our depression and that life had become unmanageable. My life was unmanageable. It really was unmanageable. I fell apart. Came to believe then that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I was having insane thoughts. And maybe you have the same. How awful you are, or you're worthless. Things like that, which aren't true. It's fake news of the worst kind. And where does this come from? It comes from your childhood. I remember I had a school teacher, this is in the book. I guess I was about 9 years old. And she stood me up in the front of class and told me how awful I was. I wasn't like my brother, who was a genius, a couple of years ahead of me. And because I couldn't do some English sentence right, I must have been, I don't know if I'm dyslexic, I guess, I don't know, probably not, but anyway, I felt my face filled with shame. Shame. Shamed me out. I stood there and, you know, I never told my parents. You know why? Because they would take up for the teacher. That's why I felt. And so it did work for me that finally I was able to talk about this years later. And when I did, my face would flush with heat. But finally, by talking about it enough, I got through it. So when we go to our meetings, we can talk about these issues. Hey, we're not giving advice. We're not telling people how to live their life. But when I'm here today, I hope something I've said today can be useful to you, because it helped me. And I've been on this path for many years. And you know what? Hugh, don't you get depressed when you go to these meetings with all these depressed people, me being one of them. I said, no, I don't. I'm energized. And they said, well, that's crazy. Yeah, I know it is. But I love to go to a meeting because I find hope when I leave. I just kind of got a spring in my step. So that's what I tell. That's what I believe. And I hope that's what you believe, too, when you come here, that you find hope and healing. On this path in 2015, a mother and her child came to see us at a DA meeting because her husband was depressed, and the daughter came because she was depressed. They figured out a way to help families. Now remember, in alcoholism and the 12, this is nothing original here. It's Dr. Bob and Bill W. and Lois that's who our models are. They're the ones, not us. We're not original. We're not an original deal, but we are here to follow the leadings of people who've been there. So when we came together, they said, why don't we start a group for members of the family who we have to live with? You know, they'll drive us crazy. And so we developed a list. They developed a list, and it happened that they had the same feelings that we have when we're depressed. They felt overwhelmed. They felt like they're walking on eggshells. They're critical of the depressed person, the family member. I've been there. I did that. And I'm still trying to work myself through that, because sometimes it pops up, these little resentments or big resentments. So we said, well, why don't we write a book? So here we go. So the three of us started writing a book. And in 2015, and it's not published like our other books, but it's there. And I said, well, nothing happened. Nothing came of it. So I just let it go. Now the pandemic came. One of the worst things, I believe, for so many of us, well, for a million Americans who passed away, the pandemic created a vacuum of how to do things when we're alone. And what to do and how to survive. And I think it affected us who were depressed and are depressed, especially the children, the young people. Mental health needs are so great there. I just want to put this in here right now, a little short notice. If you are suicidal And if you are having these thoughts, there is now a national hotline, 988. All you do is dial 988 and somebody will answer that phone. They have promised there will be no silence of the at the end of the line. I've had that happen to me about a DA group. Well, I'm so mad. How come nobody answered the damn phone? I was having trouble. Of course, that made me feel awfully bad because when somebody's in trouble, we're there to help them any way we can. So what this tells us is 988, if they don't have somebody who is a therapist that knows how to deal with depression, they will find somebody in your locality. I think it's the best thing since 9/11. Really, I do. Because how hard is it to find a therapist and pay for a therapist? Difficult, especially these days. But it does help with this 988 number. So anyway, back to the family group. Do you know Al-Anon? I've been to Al-Anon, and a family member of mine goes to Al-Anon. They get so much help there. Why? Because it's built on the principles of the 12 steps, 12 traditions. So we published a book this in 2021, Depressed Anonymous Publications, called Depanon for Family and Friends of the Depressed. Hey, folks, if I'm depressed, I want my family to know what in the world I'm going through. They don't have a clue because they've never been depressed. So the availability of somebody in your family who wants to take this book and use it for their own support group, their own family members, think what will happen for us who are depressed. I used to criticize my daughter because she was depressed and wouldn't go to work. She wouldn't get out of bed. But this book explains the seriousness of people who are depressed. They're not lazy. We are not lazy. We're not bad. We're not worthless. We're not criminals. But it tells them it's impossible. It's impossible for us to do anything for ourselves. It's not in us. Not because we're mean or stupid. It's because depression completely paralyzes our lives. And this book, I promise you, will help the family members. It's a symbiotic relationship, meaning the two are separate, but coming together, they're a powerful healing force in one's life. In one of the articles I read, a church person told his people that what each church, mosque, synagogue needs is a group for people depressed in their parish or their society. I said, you know what? That is a powerful, powerful suggestion. You think that's going to happen? No. It's not going to happen. How hard is it even to get a place to meet for a meeting sometimes? So anyway, you know what? Today is a year of 2022. And here we are. The same program, the same idea, the same spirituality, somebody stronger than ourselves are meeting here today. So I want to thank the people who come here and keep coming back. Those who want to come back, they help others. I can help others. You can help others. We're in this together. It's like the old Russian saying, pray, but keep rowing to shore. I like that. Keep going, keep moving forward. And when you come here, you're going to hear somebody say, hey, I can relate to that. Besides our international meeting, we have a group on Tuesday night, a group on Wednesday night, a group on Sunday afternoon. We have groups in different languages. So, folks, this has exploded. Thanks again. Not to any of us here individually, but to Bill W. and Dr. Bob and Lois. But now we're carrying the message of hope. You and I are carrying the message of hope. Invite people here. Say, hey, there's hope here. You know, come for at least, you know, maybe six times. We have a different leader every time we meet. And you know, that's the beauty of the 12-step program fellowship, the rotation of the leadership. Today we have Katrina. she invited me here to give this talk on Depressed Anonymous. So everybody is in it. They're in it. You know, they're all in, as they say. And I thank you all for being all in. Thank you for listening. That's all I want to say today. But thank you for having me and to let me share my story. And my story is not ended yet, folks. Neither is yours. We're still moving on to another chapter. So, okay, Christine, I guess we can stop the recording. People.